From Edge Radio 99.3 FM, this is an edit of The Dice Men Cometh, the podcast.
The Dice Men Cometh.
On Edge Radio 99.3 FM, this is The Dice Men Cometh. This is a show about board games, believe it or not, and card games and role-playing games and all kinds of freaky, geeky nonsense and the freaks and geeks who play them. Trent and Mark, your hosts this evening. I'm one half of that equation. Trent's my name. Mark running just a little bit late. He will be joining us very shortly, and we've got a whole swag of stuff coming up in the show, including an interview with Concentric's Ben Nelson. He is the brains behind this little board gaming convention that's coming up in Adelaide a little bit later on in September. So some details on that, plus information on how you can catch the Dice Men Cometh-ing live at PAX in Melbourne over the weekend of October 31 to early November. That's right, we've got a panel at PAX and we're going to tell you all about it in just a few minutes. But first, seeing as Mark's not here, I'm going to take this little opportunity to get on my soapbox, get this out of the way, because I don't, you know, often get the chance to speak without some idiot interrupting me constantly. We were talking around about this time last week about a new card game that's on the way called Lap Dance. Lap Dance, yes. And it's basically, well, actually, we don't have a lot of information about it. We know it's from a Greek company called Artipia Games. There's a cover image. It looks pretty much as bad as what you might imagine it to be. It puts players in the role of managing a strip club. While the boss is away, you've got to step up, look after the girls, look after the customers, look after the drinks, that kind of thing. This game, Lap Dance, has paralyzed the internet, or at least the little corner of it that board gamers and card gamers like us like to congregate in, which is a website called Board Game Geek. There are all sorts of furious comments and flaming going on in forums around this thing, and we know nothing about it yet, aside from the fact that it's got a lot of cheesecake on the cover, which, you know, in one way is maybe nothing new in the world of board games. We're used to seeing chainmail bikinis and other practical items of combat gear in the sorts of games that we like to play. But this one, Lap Dance, seems to be taking it to a whole other level, and it's been bugging me. We talked about it a little bit last week, and I just wanted to say this. The realm of board games, it's media. It comes under that umbrella. It's a form of storytelling. It's a form of media, and it's maybe a little bit, in some respects, even though it's an ancient practice, in the modern form, in terms of publishing, it's a little bit younger than some other mediums like television or radio or film. And perhaps it's even a little bit younger in some sense than video games, all of which are slowly beginning to realize you cannot get away with this kind of sexist, misogynist nonsense. And frankly, they've realized that it's time to start growing up, albeit slowly, but, you know, there's many people involved in these industries, so I guess slowly but surely we'll weed out the idiots. And that's the last I'm going to comment about this game. And hopefully we'll just see it die a slow, painful death. Okay, that's me on my soapbox. Mark's just coming into the studio right now.
Smith is here.
You're just in time for this evening's metal track from the mighty Baroness Marching to the Sea. March of the Sea by Baroness on Edge Radio 99.3 FM. The Dice Men Cometh with Trent and Mark. Nice of you to join us.
Oh, I'm so sorry I was running late. You know, anyone would think that people have nothing better to do than get the absolutely latest telecommunications device.
You're selling iPhones, aren't you?
Yes, yes. I'm in the telecommunications industry and the world has gone iPhone mad.
Well, at least it could be worse. You could be selling the iWatch. How dodgy does that thing look?
Yeah, I did see one on Facebook the other day. It was carved out of an apple that I thought it's probably about as useful.
But, you know, these are the devices that are integrating with the board games and card games that we're playing.
Yeah.
Increasingly so. You're not going to be able to do these things without some kind of app.
Yep, that's right.
To assist you.
That's right. It's funny because I remember I tried Arkham Horror with... They created a... Fantasy Flight Games created a dice rolling app.
Oh, yeah.
And it had, because the thing with Arkham Horror is there's all these decks of cards. And they created an app that basically had the decks of cards in the app. So you didn't have to do all this card stuff anymore. Just didn't feel the same, though. You know, like pulling out the card, reading the flavor text.
This is the thing. This is the appeal of this archaic hobby in the digital age. Yep. It's because it's physical.
Yep.
It's physical and it's social, and that's the novelty.
Yes.
Right? Because we can get all the computer graphics that we want on screen and online, but it's just not the same as sitting around talking crap with your mates.
Yeah, that's right. So it's going to be interesting to see these games where, you know, the app plays a critical part, like... What was the one we talked about last week?
XCOM.
That's right, XCOM. Mm. Games like that where it is a critical part of the game that you can't do without it, it's going
to
go.
Well, XCOM has made the jump from a computer game to a board game.
Yeah, interesting.
But now has this app as part of it. It manages the alien invasion that's happening
I'm
or something.
I'm not sure. And I'm going to guess in a way it's a little bit like the soundtracks in Space Alert or in Escape Curse of the Temple.
Mm.
You know, they sort of add an element, but I guess with those you're not interacting with them as such, as it just plays alongside the game.
Well, you can't
while
play with
playing.
Yeah, you can't play without them because they give you the cues for certain things to activate.
Yeah.
And speaking of being social, have you been playing anything lately, good sir?
Look, I have. I did roll up to the grand opening of our new friendly local games store. So we have two now, which is just fantastic news for us, obviously. Good games. And one of my friends there, Dave, who does a fantastic job of putting our podcast together every week. He's the technical guru, the IT genius behind this.
He looks like Silent Bob.
Yes. He had purchased Carcassonne South Seas.
So is this an expansion for Carcassonne?
No.
Another one?
No, so it's a new game. Yeah, it's not a new game. It's actually, as I found out, it's first of the Carcassonne Around the World series.
Ah.
So it's basically a re-implementation.
It's milking the lizard, isn't it?
It's got water in it, so there could be some shark jumping. But look, they've twisted a little bit. So instead of building cities, you're building islands. Instead of building roads, you've got bridges between the islands. Instead of farmers, you've got fishermen. And
it's
then
the same game
instead
rethemed.
Of cloisters, you've got these markets.
It's the same game rethemed.
It's very similar. It's very similar, but give Klaus Jürgen Vrede the benefit of the doubt here, because what he's done is now when you put your little man, I don't know what he's called, your meeple, you call him like a knight or a thief or whatever.
Yeah.
Now if he goes on a bridge, you don't get points for the bridge. On various parts of the bridge, there are little shell icons. And so when you score the bridge, you don't get points. You get these little wooden shells. And you've got shells, bananas, of course, in the tropics, and fish. And then what you do is, so there's no points as such, but then you have these little ships, which are called traders. And on the little ships, it'll say there's a whole stack of them, and you have four of them out at a time. It'll say, okay, trade in one banana, one shell, and one fish for 3 points, or trade in six of any one thing for 5 points. So you're getting your little resources, and then you're trading them in for points. So there's no score track as such. You're getting these little ships, and at the end of the game, you count up the points on your ships. You get some points for extra leftover resources you've got at the end.
My God, that sounds so incredibly innovative.
Look, it's a little bit different. There's this interesting mechanic where you can fish, believe it or not, for fish. And what you're doing, so like in Carcassonne where you enclose an area, it's a farm, and you get score these massive points at the end. Well, with fishing, you can put a fish farmer in there and get all the points. But other people can come in and fish individual little fish out of the pond so that at the end there's nothing in there.
Yeah, well, that's, you know, of course, what happened in Somalia, and that's why everybody, all the fishermen, turned to piracy. Does that happen?
No.
Because that's not in the South Pacific,
so look,
is it?
Look, it's an interesting twist. It came out in 2013. There's a mini expansion called Carcassonne South Seas Freitag, or Friday.
Oh, God.
You get a little black meeple, not racist at all.
No.
And you slowly build this separate little island, and on each part of the island, Friday moves around each round and gives bonuses to people, basically. It's a bit hokey. Look, I think if you'd never come across Carcassonne and you saw this, it's great. If you've already got the base Carcassonne and the expansions and stuff, you don't need it at all. It's, I guess it's not a bad introduction to Carcassonne because the farmer mechanic was always sort of the complicated part for Carcassonne that didn't really make it.
Yeah, if you're a under the, if you're under
game.
The age of nine.
Yeah, yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
So it simplifies that a little bit. But look, do we really need this game in this hobby? I'd say no. It was interesting. It was fun. An interesting little twist. But for me, plain old Carcassonne with the Jump the Shark expansion would have just done fine.
A little black meeple called Freitag.
That's right.
I was talking a moment ago about how board games is yet to outgrow misogyny and sexism. Mm-hmm. Add racism to that, and yes. Let's move on. I've been playing lately Firefly.
Ooh, yeah, you got it to the table.
From Gale Force 9, the game of the very popular science fiction franchise that perhaps should have died a death some time ago, but of course in the age of the internet, nothing ever goes away completely, does it?
There's a new fan film out now. I haven't seen it yet, it looks really interesting.
Look, I like Joss Whedon as much as the next guy, but seriously, it's been 12 years, guys. Yeah, let's move on, for God's sake. This is the game, nonetheless, that puts you in the pilot seat of Serenity, the Firefly-class ship, and you get to travel the verse and take the jobs, and you get to keep on flying. It's got fantastic components, of course, lots of pictures and symbols and things from the games, lots and lots of cards.
World's greatest paper money.
Amazing, amazing graphic design job on that. Decks of cards that are giving you... when you're pulling into various ports, you're delving into these decks to see what you can buy. There's contacts, so some of the characters from the game like Badger and Niska and what have you. There's the Misbehaven deck, which gives you little challenges that you need to pass. You pull into port on a planet, you get to draw cards, you're getting crew members and bits of equipment, and you're choosing jobs, and you're trying to stitch together the jobs
and the crew you need, the skills for that particular job.
In a way that you can jump from planet to planet that's most efficient, so you're not darting from A to B to Z in the wrong order.
The old pick-up-and-deliver game.
And there's scenarios and some goals and stuff. If you close your eyes and imagined exactly what a game of Firefly should be, this is it.
Yeah, yeah. It's okay. a brilliant job of implementing that theme into a game, isn't it?
And that's the problem.
Yeah.
A lack of imagination. Because this gives you exactly what you think it would be, that pick up and deliver thing, and it doesn't give you anything else.
Yeah, okay.
And I was frankly not terribly excited by this. I found it far too long and too slow for what it was.
Yeah.
It's just a lot of flying around with not a huge amount... There's nothing compelling about it.
That flying mechanic, that flipping over a card for every space you go.
That's right, that's right.
Keep flying, yep. Keep flying, whatever that card says.
Oh, someone's shooting at you. It's fine. If you're a fan of the game and you're not a huge board gamer, I suppose this is going to really excite you because it really does capture the flavour of the show, and it does that very, very well.
Yes.
I just don't think it's particularly clever as far as design goes.
See, I mean, I guess I'm a brown coat and a gamer, and I loved it.
And it's like something from the 80s.
Yeah.
It's like Talisman or something like that, you know?
Yep, and I must admit, like, I played the introductory scenarios. I think we were finished in 90 minutes. I think you're right. How long did your game go for?
3.5 hours.
Yeah, okay. Look, I think I would start to get tired of it after three. It's a bit like...
We were learning the rules.
Such
as they are. Yeah. So, at Firefly from Gale Force 9, a thumbs down from me.
Ooh.
There are some expansions coming out for it that apparently increase player interaction or something, but frankly, this is not a game that needs more stuff to make it better.
Oh, no.
No. So that's what we've been playing lately.
What we've been playing, yeah.
Now, you've got all the research you did on Kickstarter the other week. You came up with some awesome data.
Yeah, well, look, we've got some really good stats. Have we got time to talk about it now?
Well,
or?
Let's see. Maybe we'll go to the interview next with Ben Nelson from Concentric Games. I had a chat to him just the other night to talk about the event that's coming up in Adelaide in, just a week or so.
Yeah.
We'll get into that next on the Dice Men Cometh here on Edge Radio 99.3 FM.
Ben Nelson coming up next, but firstly, that was, if I can find it here,
I hate that how the screen scrolls up, you know?
Oh, my God.
That was
Mark.
After the Disco by Broken Bells. You're on the Dice Men Cometh 99.3 FM Edge Radio. If you didn't guess it, I'm behind the desk and stuffing things up. Anyway, during the week, Trent spoke with Bent Nelson about the upcoming Concentric Games.
We're talking Concentric in Adelaide. It's coming up on the 27th, the 28th of September. The Dice Men Cometh can't be there. So we've got Ben Nelson to be here. He's the brains behind the event and he joins us now on the show. Ben, how are you?
I'm pretty awesome, actually. Just over a week to go and I'm a bit excited.
Yes. Now, let's find out a little bit about you first up. You're a graphic designer of some repute and have indeed worked on some notable games.
I've worked on a couple, yeah.
Tell us about them. War of the Roses with the man we love here at the Dice Men Cometh, Peter Hawes, to start
with. Peter Hawes, yeah. I've worked with Peter on Wars of the Roses. Also, Merchants and Marauders a couple of years back as well.
Oh, now, I'm dying to get that back to the table again. That game's been frustrating the hell out of me. It's pure Ameritrash joy, that game.
Absolutely. Yeah, there's an expansion due out sometime soon as well. So
Is that right? Oh, fantastic. Okay. So, Ben, how long have you been involved with Concentric and how long has this been running?
Concentric's first year was in 2012. We used to hold it up in the Barossa Valley wine region at a hotel made out of converted train carriages.
Which has been the butt of some jokes, I understand, because I'm led to believe that while that sounds like a great idea, the hotel itself had seen better days.
It certainly has. It doesn't exist anymore. I believe it's now a Woolworths cannery.
All right, so from a condemned hotel, we've gone to the salubrious surrounds of the Burnside Community Centre in downtown Adelaide, yeah?
Yep, only 10 minutes from the CBD, so hoping to attract a few more of the interstate folks.
You know, I've never even been to Adelaide.
Oh, where have you been then?
I know, well, I've been bloody here in Hobart, but I feel this kinship with it because, of course, both of our cities are the punchline to numerous jokes.
Yeah, we've got the churches. What's the call to action for Hobart?
Usually having sex with your relatives.
So it's not the heads.
That too. I think one might lead to the other, Ben. Yes. Look, Concentric, $20 to get in, and what are we getting for our money over this weekend on the 27th and 28th?
2 days of solid gaming. I open the doors at 9 a.m. and we go right through to midnight on the Saturday, and then up nice and early on the Sunday to open at 9 again and right through to all 9 p.m. This year we've also managed to join forces with the local role-playing convention, Conformat, and yeah. We've got dedicated role-playing stream now.
A whole sort of 2 days of role-playing scheduled with, you've got Pathfinder, Beginner's D&D sessions and all sorts of bits and pieces.
A couple of indie games as well, which is good to see.
So tell us a little bit about the gaming scene in Adelaide. Are you part of a larger club? Is there a group behind this that's helping you out? You're not doing this all on your own, are you, Ben?
Well, now that I've got the Conformat guys on board, I'm not doing it on my own. They're helping with the RPG stuff, but otherwise it's, pretty much me. The Adelaide Board Game Group is where I usually go to game the Monday nights at the German club, so a nice Weissbier.
Mm-hmm.
There's quite a few Euro gamers here, but I'm rather fond of my Ameritrash.
And do you get around to any of the other conventions around the country? Is there anything, you know, in particular that you're trying to imitate here, or any particular goal that you're after with Concentric?
Well, that was one of the reasons I started Concentric, because I always used to go interstate to the other big Aussie cons, BorderCon, CanCon, ConVic. But I've got very young kids and it's been a bit harder to travel. So I thought, well, hey, why not start my own? So talking to Julian, who used to run ConVic, which has become MeepleCon. And Neil, who you interviewed a few months back, who does BorderCon. I'd say it's most akin to BorderCon in nature, a very friendly gathering, people rocking up, meet new gamers, join new games.
Yep, and you're getting a crew in from interstate as well. Yeah, which is lovely. It's you know, obviously it's just a drive, you know, of some hours rather than catching a plane or a boat across the pond, which is the problem we have in bringing people here to little old Hobart.
Oh, we had someone from Tassie last year. I was hoping to collect the whole set, but we didn't get anyone from Darwin.
Yeah, well, look, we were hoping to get across this year, but life has conspired against us, as you say, family, jobs, that kind of thing.
Life. Don't talk to me about life.
I know. And look, talking of life, is there any more board game work on the graphic design side of things for you?
I'm working on a new project which is going to be launched as a Kickstarter maybe earlier, later this year or early the following. Monstrous by Kim Brebeck over in Sydney. It's a dexterity card game. So you're flicking cards or throwing cards and you are playing the part of a very angry Greek god smiting the humans for not getting into the temples enough. So it's 20 minutes of trash talk. It's great.
Oh, man, that reminds me of something like, you know, the old original version of Clash of the Titans with, was it Charlton Heston who was in that? And they had that big chess table and...
Well, you'll be pleased to know that in this game you get to release the Kraken!
Yes! All right, and maybe you'll give that a little bit of a play test at Concentric?
Yeah, absolutely. I'll have a copy there.
Ben, it's been short but sweet. Best of luck with the event. As you say, just over a week away. We wish we could be there. And, hey, can we catch up just to see how it all went? Maybe give it some photos, you know, stick them up on our Facebook page, something like that?
I'd love to. I'll zap them through to you via the interwebs.
All right, and where do we go to find out more about Concentric at the last goddamn minute?
Well, if you Google Concentric Games Adelaide, you're bound to find it. Otherwise, you can find us on Google+, Twitter, Facebook, you know, all the usual suspects.
All right. Ben, good on you, mate. Best of luck with the con.
Great talking to you. Thanks for having me on the show.
That was Trent talking to Ben Nelson about Concentric Games. Really wish I was going to that one. I'd really love to check out the Adelaide gaming crowd.
Got talking to him a little bit later after that, mm-hmm. and there was one more thing I wanted to mention, because he's charging $20 per head for the weekend, and yes. It covers the cost of the venue, so they've obviously massively upgraded their venue from this hotel that was condemned. And anything he makes over and above the venue hire cost is going to go straight to Movember.
Oh, fantastic.
Great cause.
Brilliant.
He's a good egg, Ben Nelson.
Okay, look, well, now when we come back, we're going to talk about Kickstarter. Not my usual Kickstarter update. We've got some really interesting stats about Kickstarter, how it's developed over the years, where it's been, where it's going, where it's happening, what is not. We're going to talk about that next, but first, some music. A Tassie band, Ivy Street, with their track 1980. Oh, remember it like it was yesterday. You're on Edge Radio 99.3 FM with the Dice Men Cometh, Trent and Mark. And so I unearthed some stats. I didn't do the work. Board Game Geek did the work. Some really interesting stats, Trent, on Kickstarter. And it sort of tracks from 2010, where Kickstarter started. And let's just start at the beginning here. Like, so in 2010, $91,000 was pledged on board game Kickstarter projects. Now in 2014, up to the beginning of September, $27 million have been pledged for board game projects. That's a massive growth.
And that tells you everything right there in the way that Kickstarter and crowdfunding, but Kickstarter in particular, because that seems to be the platform that the board gamers have congregated around, and how nerds at home in their garage, for good or for ill, have really changed our hobby. And we were talking, it's great to actually get some concrete stats and numbers around this hobby. We mentioned a few weeks ago that the overall hobby at the moment's worth around about $500 million globally. $27 million within that.
It's not a significant and not an insignificant percentage, that's for sure. As crowdfunding, I mean, it's, 6-7%.
And the really interesting thing is if you break those years down, so as you say, $91,000 in total in board games back in 2010, that increases in 2011 to $1,400,000. And then in 2012, all of a sudden...
Yeah, $10 million.
And
that's
then
massive.
In 2013, it jumps again to...
Almost $29 million.
And right now, we're on track here. I mean, obviously, 2014 isn't over at the time of broadcast. Yeah. We're on track to at least come equal with that. Possibly, if the trajectory continues, go a little bit higher.
Yeah, look, I mean, I'm...
But you're not going to see another exponential jump.
That's right. When I look at that, I think maybe we're heading for the low 30s. So sort of 10 million to 28 million to say 30 odd million. Is it a plateau? You know, that's the interesting thing, I guess, isn't it?
Well, I would hope so, because the faster the, you know, I mean, this is like the Chinese economy otherwise. Mm. You know, if you continue to grow at that rate every year,
yeah,
sooner or later...
unsustainable.
Exactly. So it has to plateau out at some point. And what you've got here is a disruptive technology,
yes,
essentially. You know, that, you know, that's one of these buzzwords that gets thrown around at the moment.
Is that what it is?
Well, look, it is. You know, it's like... Okay, it's not as significant as the printing press or the bloody internet, all right? Okay, perhaps it's a little bit of hyperbole for me to go out on a limb like this, but it's a disruptive technology in that it's changed the way the hobby runs.
Well, it breaks down the barriers to entry into the market, that's for sure.
And it's never going to be the same after
Absolutely,
this.
Absolutely, yeah.
And if it's not Kickstarter, it's going to be Indiegogo or some other
possible
platform,
yeah, that's right,
that comes after it.
And look, one of the really interesting things, though, here is... These stats are broken down into all Kickstarter projects and then Kickstarter projects with miniatures. Now, obviously, we've seen some amazing miniatures project. The one that comes to mind for me was the Reaper miniatures, mm-hmm, that raised $2 million or something. You know, started out with raising $20,000 or $30,000 and ended up raising, I think, something like $2 million.
From memory, that's got the record for the board game that's raised the most.
And look, interesting to look at this. No miniatures projects in the first couple of years of Kickstarter. Look at 2012. Now, the average Kickstarter campaign in 2012 was around about $55,000. That's all Kickstarter. The average miniatures campaign in Kickstarter in 2012 raised almost $330,000. So it's like more than six times larger than the average board games. And the number of successful board game projects in 2012, 188. Mm-hmm. The number of successful miniatures projects, 11. So what we're looking at is a huge number of dollars crammed into not a huge number of projects.
But they're expensive to produce, those fancy little miniatures.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it's a precision manufacturing process.
Yeah. But, you know, some of these board games have had a high level of components. I think, and it was interesting, you know, every time I look on Kickstarter, you see these miniatures projects, they're always getting overfunded. It seems like it doesn't matter what it is. If it's got miniatures, it's going to ride. And I guess a classic, you know, take away the Reaper one, which was just miniatures, Zombicide, where it's a zombie. I mean, you know, how many more buzzwords can you fit in? A zombie board game with miniatures.
Yeah.
That one, you know, that was one of the amazing ones. And they must be up to six or seven expansions for that already in the last 18 months or so.
What's the attraction of the miniatures, Mark? Is it just kids with too much disposable income and too much time on their hands because they don't have jobs and they're just spending mum and dad's money?
I don't know. And look, I saw one just recently and there's no miniatures produced. It's only the 3D images of what the miniatures will look like. But I guess, you know, in this day and age of technology and production, these things are amazingly detailed. Now, whether the end result miniatures are going to look anything like those, these ones, I can't even remember the name of the game because it was so uninteresting, but the miniatures just look brilliant. And, you know, I guess there's that risk. You don't know what they're going to turn out like.
Well, as 3D printing technology continues to improve and get cheaper at the same time, you are just going to be able to download these designs and make them at home.
Well, it's going to take print and play games to a whole new level.
Yeah, and then maybe it'll take pirating of games to a whole new level. I don't know. Talking about that plateau that's happening at the moment, though, because that idea is borne out in the figures around the dollars spent on miniatures games as well, because $17.5 million last year,
yes,
on miniatures games from Kickstarter. At the moment, well, as of the 5th of September, just over $14 million. So maybe that's peaked.
Mm.
We've reached peak miniature.
Well, it takes oil to produce them. Maybe that could be a problem.
Oh, is that what it is? Right.
But look, you know, interesting, the board games, the campaigns are getting big. 2013, the average board game campaign overall was $94,000. But interesting, in 2014, it's $84,000. So, yeah, maybe the days of these great, huge campaigns are over and it's going to be more, you know, we've seen them lately with some campaigns we've talked about whose names escape me that have only been, you know, 10, 15,000.
Sure.
Seems to be quite a reasonable result. And look, while we're on it, bicycle cards. We don't need any more. We don't need any more decks of cards, okay? No more cards!
The other thing that's happened in here is the high-profile campaigns on Kickstarter that have gone belly up.
Ah, yes.
And probably the single biggest one was a title called The Doom that came to Atlantic City.
Yes.
I believe we talked about that on this show. So it was sort essentially...
of a Monopoly crossed with Cthulhu.
Right, right. And they raised plenty of money, which the campaign organizer proceeded to live on for the next year and a half. And the timelines just got blown out and blown out. And eventually he posted up a message that basically said, yeah, it's not going to happen. And he took off to Mexico.
And I remember probably maybe 6-9 months before that, I think it was Jeff Engelstein, who I remember was always, and still is, a guest contributor to the Dice Tower podcast, and famously one of the co-designers of Space Cadets and Space Cadets Dice Duel and the Ares Project. He actually predicted that there was going to be a big Kickstarter flop that would... I think he predicted that it was sort of be the end of Kickstarter, which it wasn't, but I guess it was perhaps a turning point. It is interesting to see how these things are going. And you can see with board games, the median campaign, so for the mass-minded, you'll know what the median is, because I don't. The median, they're sort of not just the number of projects divided by the total number of people or dollars, but the projects are more likely to be this size for a layman's term. You know, we're looking at 21,000 in 2012, 26,000 in 2013, 23,000 in 2014. So it sort of bears out what we said, that the standard project is around that $20,000 mark, and then every now and again you get one of these absolutely crazy projects that raises hundreds of thousands, if not millions of dollars.
And a lot of the time they have miniatures in them. So there you go, some half-assed analysis and statistics, or as we like to call them, anal stats. From Mark on the Dice Men Cometh, and some half-assed news on the way as well. But foist, just a very quick shout-out to Graham Banks, David Rutter, Rob Fitzpatrick, Terry Jones, Con Stavronos. All of them have hit us up on the Facebook page recently for Dice Men Cometh. You should do the same if you haven't already.
Thanks so much, guys. And look, I'm going to play a track. No segue this week. A guy that I had a lot of respect for, Jeremy Ball, tragically killed earlier in the week. To me, he always was a charming man. Ah, Death Cab for Cutie with a great Smiths cover there. This Charming Man on Edge Radio 99.3 FM. With Trent and Mark, from one charming man to another. Trent.
Do you have any idea how much I used to hate the Smiths? I hated the Smiths with a passion. I wanted to gut Morrissey like a fish and festoon my bedchamber with his guts. That is how much I used to hate him. But that was quite a good cover.
I love the Smiths. Hang on.
And now it's time for the latest installment of the bestest, halfest, assest news on the planet. It's half-assed news!
That's right, because board games are serious. The industry's serious. We're serious people, serious podcasters and radio hosts. And this is seriously half-assed news. Games Workshop, speaking of miniatures,
yes,
one of the longest-running miniatures companies, producer of Warhammer et al., are reprinting Space Hulk.
Oh, yeah, I saw this. Looks massive.
Yeah, the third edition from 2009 is getting a dust-off with a little bit of a tweak. Now, you would think that Space Hulk, being a really popular title from a lot of people's childhoods, that fans of Games Workshop and that kind of thing would be happy about this. But they're not. They're complaining. Because, of course, Games Workshop once said that they were never going to reprint it ever again. And now they're reprinting it and it's too expensive and it's just a little bit different and it's not what they're going to... Don't buy it!
Yeah, and I remember when third edition came out, it was such a limited quantity that... Like, straight after, people were selling them on eBay, like $250, $300. It was ridiculous.
If you're wondering what the fuss is all about, Space Hulk is essentially the first half hour of Aliens in a board game. Mm. Yeah, sneaking around all those hexagonal-shaped sci-fi corridors, shooting aliens and bugs and stuff. But look, it's really no surprise that Space Hulk is getting a dust off from Games Workshop because the company's in trouble. Their sales are down 8.2% worldwide. So sales have dropped and profits have dropped in the past year more than 50%.
Oh, wow.
£16 million, because they're an English company, down to just £8 million in 1 year.
Jeez.
CEO Tom Kirby resigned from Games Workshop early last year. They are yet to announce a replacement. Mm. They've been going through a big restructure, and there'll be a new CEO appointed early in 2015 to take the company into the future, no matter what that looks like. But Space Hulk is, you know, one of those popular titles that they're hoping will get them
through this.
Yeah, exactly.
Because I always wondered whether, you know, one of the things about board games... excuse me for interrupting, Trent.
No, you're right.
One of the things about board games was how it seemed to be experiencing a resurgence in a global financial downturn because, you know, for $40 or $50, you can get a lot of entertainment that takes you away from the real world, and, you know, you can forget about the fact that you're broke and you can't afford to feed yourself and you haven't got a job. But miniatures always struck me as a hobby that, you know, it's bloody expensive.
It is.
And, you know, I was surprised that didn't have more of a downturn.
Of course, Warhammer et al. We don't know a lot about them ourselves. We've had guests
and
come
one
in.
Of the days, one of these days, we'll have another guest come in and talk about it when they're ever available. Are you listening, PJ?
But we do know that they are expensive, and perhaps that's what Games Workshop needs to have a think about: more introductory level games. Fantasy Flight Games, another one of our favourite publishers, is releasing a title called The Last Banquet. This is their attempt to move into the social deduction space. Games like Werewolf and Coup that we're big fans of. 6 to 25 players for this one. They take on roles as members of a royal court around a dinner table. There are multiple scenarios as the factions at the table attempt to kill the king. The Last Banquet. It's actually an old title that they've bought from some other publisher.
Oh, really?
They're dusting it off. Yep. RPG news. Pathfinder.
Mm-hmm.
If you're looking for a good, crunchy D&D experience, you might like to try 5th edition D&D, or D&D Next, they're calling it, or you can just play Pathfinder,
yes,
because people love it. There's a new adventure path starting in February 2015, a six-part series called Giant Slayer, and part one's called Battle of Blood March Hill. That sounds juicy. Get your teeth into that.
Not many RPG tropes in that one, that's for
sure.
Raw
meat and veins between your teeth. Power Grid, the 10th anniversary edition.
Speaking of meat and veins between your teeth.
Power Grid, a classic Euro game of trying to power your various
grids,
Germanic cities and what have you. Although there's all sorts of different maps available for it. You don't have to just play in Europe. The 10th anniversary edition is coming from Rio Grande Games in October. It features custom wooden pieces, an updated deck of power plants, and a giant board.
Oh, my goodness.
This thing's massively oversized, apparently. Cryptozoic, a game publisher of some repute, though for the life of me, I've got a mental blank now as to any of their titles.
They have a lot of, themed games, licensed games.
Right.
Zombie movie tie-ins. They might have done the Walking Dead board game and that sort of thing. They do have a lot of license, get a lot of licensed products.
We did say it was half-assed news.
Yes.
Okay. Cryptozoic Scott Gator has left the company to form a brand new publisher called Renegade Game Studios. Not much pathos in that title.
Yeah, that's right.
There, Scott, good on you. They've also taken the rights to a few of the Cryptozoic games with them to start with, so they're going to be publishing Gravwell. Also the aforementioned Doom that came to Atlantic City, because they bought that license up once it became available. And they've also... he's also worked at Upper Deck as well, so he knows what he's doing. So I reckon Renegade Game Studios is going to be a name that we'll hear a bit more often. Fantasy Flight Games again. Also RPG News. They've got a new series coming out called The End of the World.
Ooh.
It's a role-playing game series based on various kinds of apocalypse.
Oh, okay.
So I think the first title's based around zombie
apocalypse. Yeah,
of course. The next one's a Cthulhu invasion, monsters from beyond. Then there's the alien invasion a la Independence Day and all that stuff. And I think the final volume is going to be a robot apocalypse.
Oh.
So it's, you know, Judgment Day, Terminator stuff.
So Brains in Jar, the apocalypse.
One can only hope. There's four books in this series, five scenarios in each. And they're all sort of thematically linked. But I think like in the zombie one, the rules for where the zombies come from and what they are a little bit different in each one. So maybe in one, you know, they need a headshot to be killed or I don't know. Look, it just sounds interesting because the twist on it is that in this game, instead of creating a character, you play as yourself.
Oh.
Right. So, and you've got to just make do with whatever objects and equipment are around.
So no superpowers.
No.
I've got my boots and my puffer jacket.
It's not a live-action role-playing game.
Thank goodness.
You do put together a kind of character, but you're going to have positive characteristics along with negative characteristics. Mm-hmm. So you might be a good planner, right? You might be the guy who, you know, stays calm in the middle of all the chaos.
Yes.
But you're also, I don't know, a glutton. And you're addicted to M&Ms or something.
As if someone opens a packet of corn chips, you can't stop.
Fantasy Flight Games, the end of the world. And one final bit of half-assed news, and also, look, an inevitable thing that we always knew was going to happen. WizKids, in March 2015, is releasing the game that has the worst, most ridiculous, overblown, overlong title of any game that I've ever found. DC Dice Masters Justice League Dice Building Game.
Yep. It had to come, didn't it?
The DC Dice Masters Justice League Dice Building Game takes the Quarriers mechanic to the DC universe.
Oh, yes.
There you go, fanboys. More plastic cardboard crack for you.
Absolutely. So we're going to come back for a quick wrap-up after this.
So be there!
And if you've got a games night planned, then I'm on call to be there. That was Kings of Leon... On call, Edge Radio 99.3 FM. The Dice Men coming through Trent and Mark.
Yeah, if you want Mark to come around and kick your ass and gloat, that's the proviso.
I'll go easy on you.
Hey, PAX coming up at the end of October in Melbourne. And this is the Penny Arcade Expo, which is all things geek. It's a lot of video games, and the board game section of it has just grown.
Yeah, it's
going to
be massive. And look, I've heard there's going to be some famous board gaming celebrities there.
Oh, really? Who's that?
Martin Wallace.
That's right. And he's going to be on the panel that we're hosting.
On our panel!
Hey, listen, I've really got to pass on thanks to Melissa and everybody at Board Games Australia for inviting the Dice Men Cometh to host a panel this year. And it's really very flattering to be asked. And it's great to be involved. And it's all confirmed. It's all locked in. Over the past couple of weeks, we've just been nailing down the last couple of details. We're
sitting here scratching ourselves going, is this real?
We're doing a 1 hour panel and we're being given 3 day passes.
Hey, don't say that, you might change your mind. No, but we're also going to be doing some live recording,
sure.
Vox Pop style. And if any of you have heard the Vox Pops that Trent did at BorderCon, you will know that was some of the most amusing and insightful board games radio this side of the last BorderCon.
So if you're going to be at PAX, we'll see you there. Please do say hello. And we're going to be on the 1st of November, which is the Saturday, at 1:30 in the afternoon in something called the Drop Bear Theatre.
Ooh.
I do hope this is not just like a box sort of gaffer tape to the back of Jeff's shed in Melbourne.
It's Jeff's shed. It's going to be all above board.
The name of our title, Designing Board Games in an Established Universe.
Mm.
Shall I read you the preamble?
Yeah,
for it? Okay.
Do in 15 seconds.
More and more licensed properties are coming to board games, but designing these is a challenge. You could have an instant hit, but you could incur the wrath of fans. And are any of these film and TV tie-ins really any good? Join Trent and Mark from DMC Podcast with designers who face this challenge firsthand. Martin Wallace, who has worked on games for Doctor Who, Discworld and more, and Mark Morrison, who's worked with the Elric and Cthulhu properties. 1:30 on November the 1st at PAX in the Drop Bear Theatre. We'll see you there.
That is us. We're going to be there. We're not going to be here anymore because we're gone. We're out of time. See you next week. Edge Radio 99.3M with Trent and Mark. Have a great week.
This has been an edit of The Dice Men Cometh from Edge Radio 99.3 FM, Hobart's independent youth station. Find us on Facebook and edgeradio.org.au.